I expect us to come out, you know, guns blazing. You know, you get punched in the face, you want to respond. You know, we know what it takes to win a championship. We know what we have to do in order to win this game. You know, I expect us to come out with a level of focus that we've had this entire season. We split on the road. Think that's the goal. You know, you take care of home court. We did that. And then you go steal one on the road. Think we did that. I don't know where all this added pressure and, you know, this, that, and the other coming from. We did what we wanted to do. My teammates are comfortable with me. If they weren't, we wouldn't be who we are. You know, I think we've had a lot of success. You don't have that success if someone's not comfortable.
They didn't do it by luck. We didn't play up to the level we were supposed to play at. And they exposed that and took advantage of it and came out and played extremely well. So they came out there and took it to us. So you got to give them credit. They can't duplicate that. So we got to be ready for it.
I think it's great for the league what's going on right now for sure. I mean, there's, you know, great storylines, I guess, you can follow all year. And for us to be back in this situation, like you said, this is the third time. And the level of competition and intensity in the finals is unbelievable, especially when you have that history. With the opposing teams. We love to be in the finals every year. I'm sure they would love to be in the finals every year, and the back and forth. You know, a lot of things happen in the league that you can't really predict, but that would be good for everybody involved for sure. It'd be a great night to get it done, to take advantage of, you know, the home crowd, the energy, you know, how poorly we played in game four, to try to make the necessary adjustments energy-wise and focus-wise to get it done. And, you know, we're in really good shape right now to have this opportunity.
We were 15-6 right now instead of 15-1. We'd be thinking the exact same way. You take each game, you make your adjustments, you figure out what you can do better, and you do it. We have a versatile team. We have a lot of guys who play. The biggest adjustment in the playoffs that you make is always an emotional one.
They're a great team. They're assembled as good as you can be as a professional team. They're on a quest to win a championship, and, I mean, you can respect that. It's the same challenges, you know, especially being in this building. We knew coming into game five last year, if we don't protect the ball and we don't limit their three-point shooting, then we can get blown out the window and blown out this arena. And it's the same way. You know, we know what our keys to victory is. That's going to give us the best possible chance to go back home with a game six.
It was definitely a conscious effort on my end and team's game plan to make sure that we limited Steph and Clay to just some tough shots. We know they're going to make a few shots throughout the game, but you just try to stay locked in as much as possible and prepare for them as best you can. They're some special players, and they make some unbelievable plays, but you just got to keep body on them as much as possible and try to make their shots a little bit more difficult, and I think we did a good job of that in game four. Hopefully we can do that going forward.
Our mindset, you know, has to be, you know, winning game, you know, not smiling back and forth or, you know, talking and playing. I mean, they're coming after us, so we got to go after them. And, you know, I don't see anything funny or anything to smile about. You know, it's, you know, hitting and being physical and just saying that they did to us in the first three games. We got to do that. Last game in game four, I thought that's who we are. Got to be physical. If it's talking trash or, you know, knocking guys on the floor, whatever you got to do, we got to do it. We got to be physical.
If we win game five, we're going to go to seven. We win game five, it's going to go to seven. That's our mentality. We believe that our fans here are so great that they are going to put us in such a great position. So if we get this done, and we know the task is going to be great, that's a better team. We finally kind of showing who we are. We believe that if we can get it, then, and anything can happen in a game seven, and we've proven that.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza on a day we did not expect that we would even have. And that would be game six day. Or game five day. Beg your pardon. Game five. They want to be a game six day. There is not a game six day yet. But there is a game five day. And I spent all Friday telling you why there wouldn't be a game five day today. So that lets you know what in the hell I know. But in my defense, I think virtually all of America expected on Friday that there would be no game 5 day. And yet, here we sit. Welcome to the extravaganza on ESPN 106.5, the Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Great to have you aboard on the program this afternoon. Want you to be a part of the program at your leisure. Plenty of opportunities for you to call in and talk about the NBA Finals and why there is a game 5 between the Golden State Warriors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. About why the Warriors were unable to complete their unbelievable, impossible, and I guess we can say that with authority now, impossible goal of 16-0 in the postseason, because it's not possible anymore. They've lost one. The best they can do now is 15-1. We really want your phone calls on this at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Jim Cushlin is here as well. Frank Gargano is under the weather a little bit, so he's got the day off. But Jim and I will be here. We'll be taking your phone calls. We're going to talk to Dennis Manilov coming up at about an hour from now, I guess I would say around 4:10. Get the report from Cleveland, even though Cleveland is in Oakland for game number 5 tonight. but it's a place they did not expect to be. Well, let me rephrase again. I'm sure some of the players maybe expected a W. They came out with all the confidence in the world. It's a place that I did not expect them to be. It's a place, they're in a place that I think, again, most of America believed that they would not be. I think everybody had the Cavaliers after blowing, and yes, they did. They blew. They choked away a six-point lead with 3 minutes to go in game three, and they gave up an 11-point run to end the game, 11 to nothing, in a game they simply had to have, in a game that they should have had, in a game that they could have had, and they didn't take because they could not score for 3 minutes and 8 seconds. When that didn't happen, I think most of us kind of said, that's it. That's what we said on this show. That's it. Done. Over. This is a team that is not going to come out with a whole heck of a lot of momentum and a whole heck of a lot of enthusiasm in game number four because the writing is on the wall. They got blown out in game one. They got blown out in game two. And then they choked out in game three. It's all over but the shout now. I figured they'd come out strong, and they did. I figured they would come out strong for a quarter, quarter and a half, maybe even through halftime. And then the Warriors would go on a little mini run, push it out to 7 or 8. And then the Cavaliers would choke a little bit and try to start catching up by, you know, shooting long threes. You start missing a few of those. Suddenly 7 becomes 9. Suddenly that becomes 13. And suddenly we're up to a 20-point game, and the Warriors are on the way to celebrating with the championship spilled all over the carpeting in the visitors' locker room out there in Cleveland. That's just the way that I saw it happening. And it started out the way I saw it happening. Cavaliers did come out strong. You knew they weren't going to be without pride. You knew they weren't going to be playing without intensity or enthusiasm and an opportunity to try to stretch, but I just figured it would be short-lived. The adrenaline, the momentum, the fan base giving you that feeling, whatever you want to call it, did drive them. The difference, of course, between what I predicted and what really happened is that incredible hot start was the hottest start in NBA history in the finals. The Cavaliers went out there and threw up nearly 50 in the first quarter, threw up an NBA Finals record in the first half, ended up making an NBA Finals record, three-pointers in an NBA Finals game, and suddenly the Golden State Warriors had to cart all of their family and friends back to the buses, back to the airplanes, and back to Oakland, California to try to prepare the party in Oakland instead. Yeah, you didn't know that part, did you? I didn't find out about that till over the weekend either. The Warriors were so confident of their four-game sweep, up 3-0. They were so confident that they would sweep the Cavaliers in four games when they got to Cleveland on Friday, that they brought their party with them. Now, I'm not just talking about preparing the champagne and all that. Of course you do that. That's the way it's done. I mean, you got to, if it's an elimination game for one team or if it's a closeout game for another team, you always have to have that stuff on hand. But what they did, according to what I found out earlier this weekend, they brought every family member and friend they've ever known from Oakland to make it a home court style celebration on the visitors' home court in Cleveland, Ohio. They brought buses of people to be there with them, to party with them and celebrate as if they were still at home. It's kind of a unique thing. It's kind of an, it's an interesting idea because, you know, nobody really likes to celebrate, even though you get the opportunity the next year to drop that line the way Steph Curry did last year about the 2015 final when he said, man, you know, the locker room still smells like champagne. The visitors' locker room still smells like champagne. Ooh, that's a dagger line. That's just mean for the sake of mean. And I'm not saying I wouldn't have said it. And if my guy had said it and not a guy I can't stand like Curry, I might be like, ah, ha, 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 I love that. But since it's not my guy and they're doing it to my team, I didn't like it very much. But other than the opportunity to drop that line, nobody likes winning on the road. Nobody likes winning the championship on the road. You want to win the championship in front of your home fans. The Cavaliers, who did win the championship last year, did it on the road. And of course, they had to. You had to do it in a Game 7. Now, if you're in a Game 7 scenario, obviously you don't give a rat's behind where you do it because you're winning a championship. And it's do or die. There's no chance to come back home after that one if you lose that one. It's just it. Both teams are just going to be happy to be getting that opportunity. But you want to win in front of your home fans. And so they tried to bring their home fans with them. I'm not saying that they were overconfident going into game five or four. I keep getting my games messed up for some reason. I'm not saying they were overconfident going into that, but they were pretty overconfident going into game four. I mean, they had blown out the Cavaliers in games one and two. They took the Cavaliers' best shot in game three. Kyrie Irving going video game again. LeBron James with another triple-double. Kevin Love splashing and filling. And all kinds of stuff going on. No, actually, Love didn't splash and fill in game three. Beg pardon. That was the one for nine game, but he fought through. He fought through and also had 13 rebounds, six steals, and contributed to the victory. But particularly Kyrie was just going crazy. And then with 3 minutes to play, they got outscored 11-0. Kevin Durant, who filled it up with 14 in the fourth. Seven of the 11 in that run basically just stole all of the thunder and all of the excitement, and no pun intended with Kevin Durant and the thunder, all of the excitement, all of the momentum away from the Cavaliers. And so maybe they had a right to be going into game four ultra confident. If not, dare I say, overconfident. And that's not a good look, really. You don't want to be overconfident. We saw what happened. I think they went out there and were overconfident. You time up your own overconfidence, in my opinion. You time up your own overconfidence with another team's... How do you describe what the Cavaliers did in the way they shot the ball? I don't even know if I have words for it. Your overconfidence with their career night. And I think that's what it was. It was a career night. NBA record, 24 threes, and not even in massive shot volume. It didn't take them 70 shots to do that. 24 out of 45. 53%. 53% from three? Are you serious right now? They shot better or almost as good from three-point line as they did the foul line. They're 21 out of 31 in the game from the line. Terrible. Absolutely awful. LeBron missed four. Thompson, Irving, each missed one. Jefferson missed two. Shumpert missed two. My goodness. But their career night, the way they shot the ball from beyond the arc, 53% from beyond the arc, 52% on overall field goals. How about that? They were way better beyond the arc than they were inside of it. But Kevin Love splashing away, 6 out of 8, 23 points. LeBron not splashing it so much, 3 out of 8, but he did so many things so well, 31, 11, and 10, or 10 and 11 if you go rebounds first. Kyrie splashing away, 7 out of 12. J.R. Swish. 5 out of 9, his second straight game with 5 threes, finally getting out of whatever that funk was that he was in. And then you get a little bit of bench production as well. Darren Williams made his first bucket of the finals. He had two of them. One of them was a three. One for Shumpert as well. One for Kyle Korver, and only two attempts. And Channing Frye is the only one who didn't play. He probably would have hit a few threes. So you add the Warriors' overconfidence to the Cavaliers' career night, and what do you get? 137-116. Are you serious? That was just a night that's never going to be replicated. I can't imagine an NBA Finals history. I can't imagine another team scoring 86 points in the first half of an NBA Finals game, particularly an elimination game, for goodness sakes, and then making 24 threes. So that's got people what? It's got people confident. It's got people who are out there in Cleveland, people here in Northwest Ohio who are Cavaliers fans, thinking, you know what? They did it last year. It was 3-1. This year it's 3-1. Well, yeah, but it didn't require 4 in a row last year. It required 3 in a row. So it is a little bit different. But they're saying no team had ever come back from down 3-1 to win the NBA championship in the finals. Cavs did it. So now no team has ever come back down from 3-0. Why can't the Cavs do it? And that seems to be the mentality for a lot of people looking forward to game number 5 tonight. I don't mean to be the weatherman calling for rain on your sunny day, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to be just about as cynical today as I was on Friday in saying the series is over. The juice that the Cavaliers get and got in game 4 from that home crowd plays an extraordinarily important role in how well they play. Does that mean they cannot win on the road? Of course not. We know the Warriors can win on the road because they did it in game 3 with that comeback. But we also know that the Warriors are a superior team in terms of their overall roster, in terms of the way they play together, and in terms of the way they've won over 200 regular season games in the last 3 years combined, an NBA record, 73 last year, took the Cavaliers to the limit and almost won back-to-back titles, and this year have gone 15-0 prior to Friday in the postseason. They're just really that good. Steph Curry wasn't that good in Game 4. Steph Curry, 4 out of 13, 2 out of 9, 14 points, minus 25 in the plus-minus category. Raise your hand if you think Steph Curry's going to go 2 for 9 and 4 for 13 again. No? I didn't think so. Klay Thompson, 4 out of 11, 4 out of 10, 13 points. Raise your hand if you think Klay's going to be off for a second straight night. Kevin Durant continued to just be spectacular. 35 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, even in that losing cost, 15 out of 16 from the foul line. His shooting percentage finally took a tumble, 9 for 22, so just what, about 44%, I think that is, somewhere in that neighborhood. It finally took a tumble, but still for the series, averaging 34 points on 50-plus percent shooting, still doing spectacular things. He will continue to be spectacular. Curry will go back to normal, if not great, if not spectacular mode. Klay Thompson will get back to where he needs to be. Now, the X factor could be, maybe, once again, Draymond Green. Yes, the same Draymond Green who got himself booted last year from Game 5 or benched for Game 5, suspended for Game 5 for actions taken in Game 4. We know that. Draymond Green has decided to fully embrace villain role, the villainy role, the heel role, if you will. He decided to embrace it. Now he's not just talking trash on the court. Now he's not just shooting like trash on the court. But now he is also just going to go ahead and call out Cleveland fans, Cleveland residents, deciding that the Cleveland people of Cleveland just, aren't very sharp. Reporter was asking, of course, about the controversy in Game 4. About why it was Draymond Green was not suspended after his second technical. Not suspended, beg your pardon. Ejected after his second technical. Come to find out, wait. That first half technical wasn't on Green, it was on Steve Kerr. Well, TV reported it directly from the scorer's table that it was on Draymond Green. So when he got his second technical, we thought in the second half, it was pretty doggone clear that it was going to be Draymond Green being kicked out. That's not on, quote, the people of Cleveland for thinking that. That's on the TV people who fed us the information. It's on the scorer's table. NBA hired and employed from wherever they are. But he decided to call out the Cavaliers. And you know what? Their fans and the people who, quote, don't seem to be the sharpest people around, deciding, fine, let them hate me. Good news for you, Draymond. I already started long before you made that comment. Started hating you a long time ago. One of the most overrated role players in the history of basketball. One of the luckiest players ever to put on a uniform because of the team for which he puts it on. One of the guys that if he played in Sacramento or if he played in, Memphis or if he played in Charlotte or if he played in Philadelphia or one of the other NBA's other kind of forgotten cities in terms of franchises that are just kind of woebegone. He would be nowhere close to an all-star game, let alone going for his second NBA championship ring, let alone, and he might make an all-defense team, I don't know, would not be the probable defensive player of the year this year. He's able to be a role player and do the things that he does on a team that has everything else covered. If he had to do more than what he does do on the offensive end, he would be forgotten. So I don't need to worry about Draymond Green. I don't need to hear about Draymond Green. But what I do need to know, as it pertains to Draymond Green, going into Game 5 tonight of the NBA Finals, what I do need to know is exactly why he has been getting away, and I mean getting way too much leeway, from the referees in all four games for his incredibly disrespectful histrionics, showing up referees after virtually every foul called on him. I mean, I have never seen somebody cry and flail his arms and you know, curse and shout and scream and all of the stuff that he is doing ever without so much as a technical until last game. Draymond Green has been begging for technicals for four games, and he's not getting them, and I want to know why. I want to know on whose order was it given to go easy on Dre, because we don't want to have a repeat of last year. Well, what happened last year? Last year, because of the accumulation of Draymond Green technical fouls, after his foul on LeBron James, in which he punched him in the nether regions or slapped him there in game number four, it was after the fact that the NBA determined that that should have been a flagrant and that was going to go over the top and that was going to put him into a suspension situation for game five. And there are still people to this day, a full calendar year later, who say that if Draymond Green had not been suspended for game five, the Warriors would have won their second straight title. I've never quite understood that argument, by the way, because Draymond Green was not suspended for game six. Still another closeout game for the Warriors. He was not suspended for Game 7. Still,
and went off in the first half of that Game 7, too.
I'm sorry?
And went off in that first half of Game 7.
Yeah, it was a big part of that in Game 7. It still didn't win. So I don't understand why the NBA... Well, let me rephrase. I guess I kind of do understand why, but I don't understand why nobody has talked about it. Nobody in the media, nobody in the game broadcast. I've never been a believer in conspiracy theories. People who say, oh, the Patriots got all the calls, you know, shouldn't have been a hold. Atlanta should have won. The NBA, NFL's rigged. Patriots make them more money. I've never been a conspiracy guy. Oh, the NBA's rigged. They just wanted a fifth game. That's why the referees called so many fouls on the Warriors in the first quarter. They really had to have Cleveland win one so they can go and have this game in California and have a game five. I've never been a conspiracy theorist when it comes to referees rigging games or leagues ordering referees to rig games. Never. But I do feel, probably more so than ever before, like there has been some suggestion, if not outright edict or order given, to the referees in the finals to take it easy on Draymond's tees. He's going to get emotional, they were probably told. And unless it's a finger flying in the air, a particular one, a bird-like one, or mother effers or something of that nature within your earshot, unless it's so blatant that the entire arena heard it and saw it, take it easy. Take it easy. We don't need him getting three or four techs in the finals and then missing a game and having a repeat of last year and everybody wondering about the up-and-up credibility of the championship for the Cavaliers. I firmly believe that these officials have either been ordered or suggested to them to take it easy on Draymond. And that is a problem for me. All right, there's the monologue. I wanted to get all of that in about game four, as I continue to do the wrong game. Game four, as we prepare for game five tonight. A lot of storylines tonight. Will the Cavaliers get nasty and physical again? Ty Lue said they were too nice in the first three games. They started to get mean and nasty in game four. He liked it. Wants more of it. Who's the pressure on? Richard Jefferson said, it ain't on us. It's all on the Warriors. Do you agree with that? We'll talk a little bit about that. LeBron James having another monster finals. He is indeed averaging a triple-double through four games. Some are suggesting that he is the MVP, even if the Cavaliers lose, the way they thought two years ago. Those people are crack smokers. I will explain why. I will also talk more about LeBron's plus-minus ratio, which a lot of people are using as evidence or as a part of their argument for LeBron being the most valuable player in the series. I will talk about the plus-minus ratio involving LeBron and talk about why that is overrated as well. Kevin Durant making history and really, really closing the mouths of all of those who said he was just going to coattail ride to a championship with Golden State. He is now the first player with five straight 30-point finals games since Shaquille O'Neal did it. He is having a monster series. And can you compare GOATs across sports? LeBron James was asked whether or not Tom Brady is the actual GOAT. I'll tell you what LeBron James said and get your thoughts on it as well. 866-240-1065 is the number to join us. 866-240-1065. This is the Extravaganza. Bob France here. Jim Cushion will join us in just a couple as well on ESPN 106.5.
6-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed rolling on there at 3:41 now. Thanks for being with us. Talking NBA Finals game number 5. Did not expect we would have this to talk about today. I really, really thought it was going to be over on Friday, but as Ty Lue said, they didn't play nice with other people on Friday the way they did in the first three games.
You know, I thought the first two games were being too nice. The first three games, helping guys up off the floor, smiling, talking to guys, and yeah, I didn't like that. So I take game four over anything else. So, you know, talking trash, being physical, whatever you got to do to try to get that edge to win, you got to do it.
I think they had that edge, no question about it. The question is, do they keep that same tough talking, trash talking, not helping you up? This is a war mentality on the road that they had started on Friday in game four at home. That's the question as to whether or not they're going to be able to advance to a game six. Kush, appreciate you being with us as always. Jimmy, I did not expect this at all. I know you didn't. I think all of us said sweep once things happened the way they did in game number three. Yet here we are after having a weekend to contemplate everything. Do you think that they can carry that momentum from Friday all the way through Monday, from Cleveland, Ohio, all the way out there to Oakland, California, 72 hours later and keep it up?
Yeah, well, first off, I was with you and pretty much a lot of people. I thought it was going to end up being a sweep coming up on Friday. By the way, I've been at least smiling all weekend because I'm also with you. I still think the Warriors will probably win this one tonight and close it out. But I've been at least smiling all weekend knowing that it won't be a sweep and the Warriors don't get their perfection, especially because it's them, honestly. You know, a little bit of my homer side coming out. Anybody else in the NBA can go 16-0 in the playoffs. Please not these guys.
I'm kind of in the same boat on that. I mean, I hated some teams back in the day when Dr. J was playing in my favorite team. But I never would have been, like, so repulsed by somebody doing something unprecedented like that as I am with this particular team. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's today's player, if it's today's style of basketball, if it's the millennial generation that these guys represent. They're all in their 20s. I don't know what it is, but I'm with you. If they would have done that, it would have stung. I mean, it would have sucked no matter what, but it would have stung a lot worse, I think, than had it been virtually anybody else.
Right, and that's kind of what I'm thinking. So I will at least not be too terribly disappointed from my Cavs fan perspective if they, as expect, don't win this one tonight because it is back out in, you know, Oracle and all the rest that goes with that. And this is not last year's team. There is that, you know, regardless of that opinion, and I love how you laid it out last segment, by the way, when you got to this, about, you know, Draymond was there for game six and game seven last year. It's like they always mention the Draymond Green not being suspended. They always fail to mention the part that was the first NBA Finals game ever, that game five last year, where two players on the same team went for 40-plus in the same game, or if you remember that. That's the part they leave out. But in terms of your last question that you asked, can they carry some of this over from game four to game five in an Oakland?
Not some of it. They'll have to carry all of it.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
I don't mean to be petty. But, I mean, if they play a little bit under what they played on Friday and Golden State plays a little bit better than the crap they played with, and they really did, because Steph Curry was terrible, never engaged.
There was a point in that game, by the way, Bob, on Friday, where I thought the only guy who showed up to play was Kevin Durant. Honestly.
Yeah.
Like he wanted his ring because he hadn't had one yet, and he wanted it now. But I could almost get the impression from the rest of the team, like, whatever, we'll go back to Oakland and do it there.
Yeah, you know, I
almost
know
got that impression.
I'm sure
in
that
game
wasn't
four.
Their actual mentality, but it did seem that way for a little while, the way they played anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's fair to say. But you know, to the point there, if the Cavaliers play a little bit worse and the Warriors play a little bit better, the Warriors win their championship at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's just it. It happens tonight. I firmly believe that is going to be the case. The Cavaliers are going to have to play every bit as good. And I'm not saying they have to make 24 threes again.
Yeah, they don't have to.
But they have to be a very effective offensive machine from outside. Not saying record setting, but they have to be just about, you know, as efficient. Because you saw, you know, the way they are and the way they got blown out in games one and two when they are not. And
mm-hmm.
especially on the road, especially with the Warriors having fresh in their heads.
Yeah.
The memory of losing Game 5 last year, they could have closed it out in their at their place. Then they could have closed it back out in Cleveland in Game 6. And then, of course, games, all of this, they don't want to get into that again. They do not want that sort of thing weighing on them. And so I think if they play just a little bit better and the Cavaliers play a little bit worse, there is a problem. I think the Cavaliers have to play almost as good as they did in Game 4, and the Warriors even being a little bit better, that's still a chance the Cavs could win.
Yeah, and you're right by saying it doesn't have to necessarily be record-setting, but it has to be efficient enough. And in this case, I think what that means when you're specifically talking against these presently constituted Warriors, efficient enough means when that run is starting to develop, and they tried it a few times in Game 4, the Cavs made a couple shots and had an answer. How many times and how many teams in the last couple of years, Golden State at some point in the game, usually the second half, has one of those seemingly in the blink of an eye, 8, 9, 10, 11-0 runs. You can nip those at 6 or 7 tops and then start making shots again. You stop that momentum before it gets completely carried away. That's what I look at when I hear efficiency against the Warriors. You have to, instead of those runs being 9, 10, 11-0, they have to be capped at about 6, 7 max-0 before things get, you know, really out of hand. So I do agree with they have to bring pretty much all of what they had for game four to this one, including that shot making, maybe not necessarily record setting. But to me, honestly, Bob, my question is, because again, I think the Warriors will end up winning this one tonight. And all that stuff, and I'll be pleasantly surprised at 11:30, 11:45 if we have to start thinking about another game in this series. But I do want to play something for you, because I couldn't help myself Friday night, you know, after it, because it was a win. I was smiling. It was a Friday night, so I didn't have anything to do the next day. And I'm flipping around for some of the various post-game things. My more interesting question on this Game 5... Again, saying from a point of view, I think the Warriors are going to win, is the last thing I played on the Montage when Richard Jefferson, I believe on Fox Sports Ohio, because they do a pre and post thing during these playoffs, he sat down with Fred McLeod, and when Fred asked him about Game 5, Richard Jefferson said this.
If we win Game 5, we're going to go to 7. We win Game 5, it's going to go to 7. That's our mentality. We believe that our fans here are so great that they are going to put us in such a great position. So if we get this done and we know the task is going to be great, that's a better team. We finally kind of showing who we are. We believe that if we can get it, and anything can happen in a Game 7, and we've proven that.
Basically what I'm asking here, Bob, is are you buying that? If by some miracle the Cavs pull one tonight out of there, you know where, are we going to have a 7-game series?
I'm not going to go there. I heard that too, and I heard some people arguing on that basis earlier today on a couple of TV talk shows. I'm not going to go there, and the main reason why is because we saw what happened at home for the Cavaliers in Game 3. They had that game. It was theirs for the taking, and it was must win. I think we all agreed it was must win, because that would have made it 2-1 and given them a chance. Even if it is to be 3-1 the way it is now, you're not faced with the daunting task of coming from behind 3-0, which nobody, or 0-3 in your case, you know, in the losing team's case, which nobody has ever done before.
Heck, only 3 teams in all of playoff history, only once in the finals, have even forced a Game 7 from that start.
So, to me, to just say if we win this one, we will automatically win at home is asking for a little bit too much. Remember, this team that they're playing is great.
They are.
Just because we hate them, and I do, just because we believe they're arrogant, and they are, just because Draymond Green is an ass, and he is, just because Kevin Durant is a coward, instead of trying to win it in his own city, he went and joined this one, and he is, just because Steph Curry is a punk, and he is, doesn't mean they're not every bit as damn good as they appear to be, and as they appeared to be in the first three games of this series. So no, I will not join Richard Jefferson, although I will also not condemn him for the statement. Love the confidence. No problem at all with the confidence that says if we get this one, getting that. That's a little bit of a mental game too.
Yeah.
There is a mental battle going on here. And Jefferson added to that, since you brought up that from Richard Jefferson, let me play this. Because he was asked after practice, I believe it was today. I think this was from earlier today. No. Well, I don't know. I saw it a couple hours ago, so maybe it was from today, maybe it was from yesterday, and I just saw it late. But either way, Richard Jefferson was asked who the pressure is really on here going into Game 5, since the Cavaliers' backs are still up against the wall. They are still one loss away from elimination and losing their, you know, no longer being able to be call themselves defending champions. So the pressure is clearly still on Cleveland, right? Well, here's Richard Jefferson's response.
Damn right it is. It's not on us.
This is one of those practice hits, by the way, where there's all kinds of background noise.
Of course.
Sorry about that. But basically, he is saying, damn right, the pressure is on Golden State. It's not on us.
Damn right it is. It's not on us. It's not on the pressure. Where's the pressure on us? They had a 73-win team, and they added a former MVP. You know, we added... Kyle Korver and Darren Williams.
By the way, that wasn't very nice to Kyle Korver and Darren Williams to say it that way. He said, where's the pressure on us? He said they had a 73-win team and added in former MVP. We added Kyle Korver and Darren Williams. That's, by comparison, it doesn't really sound good
right
there. But his point is that's why the pressure is on them. Here's the rest.
They added an MVP to a 73-win team after being up 3-1, and then KD was up 3-1. You know, the pressure is all on them.
They added a former MVP after being 73 wins and being up 3-1. He said the pressure is all on them. And you know what? There is some truth to that, which is what makes your comment about Jefferson, Jim, that you just brought up more relevant, because he's saying the pressure is on them. And if we win this one, think about how much that pressure multiplies, that they've got to go back to our building and try it again there. And so there is a little bit of, you know, mental warfare being played out here, saying we don't have anything to worry about, almost like we're playing with house money.
Yeah.
You know, they were the 73-win team that added Kevin Durant. They were the team that was 15-0 in the preseason. We're the first team to give them an L. And so the pressure's on them to finish this off and do this strong. If we don't get it done, no, we weren't supposed to anyway. If they don't get it done, it's an epic collapse, an all-time 3-0 lead collapse. So how is the pressure possibly on us? And you know what? Makes some great points, doesn't he?
He does make a couple. And what's interesting, the confidence part that you're talking, and I was thinking this back on Friday when we were all trying to have a little fun with the JR hacked tweet, which I think he really said that.
I don't believe it's hacked for a second. I talked about that Friday. I don't believe it was hacked for a second.
No, I know. But my point is, both of those, they're exuding the confidence. And I got to say, it's one thing, of course, for, you know, guys like you and me here, Bob, on the radio, or fans in general to talk about, especially back on Friday, where everything is. I'll at least give a tip of the cap to both JR in that case and Richard Jefferson in this case. Well, good that they think that, because they're the ones actually in that locker room that actually have to then suit up and go out there. They better be thinking that. It's one thing for us to talk about how it was then or even now it's over, but they better not be thinking it's over. You know what I'm saying? I'm at least happy about that.
The only thing different, though, is Jefferson was asked the question about is the pressure on them or you guys. JR wasn't asked, hey, do you still think you can win this series? He just went on Twitter and said Cavs in 7.
But when he was asked about it, and I played some of that audio back on Friday, let me see if I can dig it up here. He did kind of confirm, though, that does sound like something I would say.
Well, yeah, I know, but my point is that what made it a story was the tweet.
Yes, of course.
That's what made it a story, the unprovoked tweet. And if you're asked the question, well, of course you're going to say, yeah, I still think we're going to win the series. What are you going to do? I'm wearing a Cavs uniform. Do you expect me to say, yeah, I predict Golden State in 6? We're going to win 2 of them and not finish. I predict Golden State at 5. We're going to win, you know, we're going to win 1 of them, but then lose. Golden State at 4. No, I don't think we're going to win game 4. Of course you're going to say, I still think we're going to win it. And obviously, since we're down 3-0, we'll have to win it in 7. So Cavs in 7. If you were answering a question about do you think you can still win, that's okay. But that's not what J.R. Smith did here. That's an unprovoked tweet where he said Cavs in 7.
Yeah.
And then said, hacked, I was hacked, I didn't really say that. That's a totally different story.
Fair enough. I'm just saying the part that both of those instances in their own way are making me think, well, at least they're thinking that, because they better not be thinking the way we kind of all were. Yeah, that's right. All I was trying to say.
Right, no, and I get it, and certainly, absolutely, they shouldn't be thinking anything but we can still do this, and obviously the way they came out in Game 4. They clearly were. So Richard Jefferson says all the pressure is on Golden State now. And Tyronn Lue says, we want to keep the pressure on by being nasty, by being mean. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
You know, I thought the first two games we were being too nice. The first three games, helping guys up off the floor, smiling, talking to guys. And, yeah, I didn't like that. So I'll take game 4 over anything else. So, you know, talking trash, being physical, whatever you got to do to try to get that edge to win, you got to do it.
Completely agree. What did you make of LeBron James and Kevin Durant going toe-to-toe, jaw-to-jaw, voice-to-voice? It looked like, if you didn't know, they were two of the most respected basketball ambassadors in the game. It looked like, you know, if two other guys were doing that, you might think, oh, my God, they're going to come to blows. There's going to be a fight. Clearly, that was not the case. But they also weren't saying, hey, man, you know what? You want to come out to my place in the off season and, you know, we'll have a good time. We'll go jet ski and we'll go on a banana boat together. It wasn't pleasant either. What did you make of that exchange?
Interesting. I mean, it was one of the first words that came to mind on that one. And
well, I think what we saw, because this was after Durant kind of complaining about a call, yeah. And I think LeBron was saying, I mean, how can you guys even complain about that? The call, that's right. Obvious, and let's be a little respectful of the game. Because Durant wanted, if you recall, Durant wanted a flagrant foul because he got hit in the face on a follow-through, and he was really, yeah. Really upset about it. And I feel like it was just LeBron going to him and saying, man, come on, really? For real? And they, you notice there wasn't, like, scowls.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't furrowed brows. There wasn't anger on either face. But it was very direct. And
yes.
Durant was not backing down one iota. He felt how he felt, and he didn't care that it was LeBron James telling him whatever it was that he was telling him about it. And I'll tell you what else I saw in it. I saw maybe a little bit of Kevin Durant standing up to the guy that he's always respected, but whose shadow he has continued to be in since he got into the league. Kevin Durant has been an MVP. Kevin Durant is a 4-time scoring champ. Kevin Durant lost to LeBron James once in the finals and continues to carry the mantle of second best player in the NBA. I feel like when LeBron started jawing at him a few years ago, that Kevin Durant might have walked away from it. I'm not trying to hear you. This Kevin Durant was like, man, who are you talking to like that? I'll tell you how I feel about it. You know what? I don't apologize to anybody. It was kind of a mentality that said, you know, that torch that everybody is talking about that is eventually going to be passed, yeah, I want it. I'm not backing down from you. I'm not walking away from you. I'm not intimidated by you. You know, yeah, you're still LeBron James, but guess what? I'm out playing you in this series, and we're going to win this championship, and I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be very, very sweet. And I'm not saying he thought those conscious thoughts while he was talking to LeBron James. Obviously, you can't think those exact thoughts while you're talking about other things. But I think the mentality that it showed from Durant was, you know what, man, in a weird way, this might be the wrong comparison because he ended up getting his butt kicked, but it was Rex Ryan going to coach the Jets and saying, I didn't come into this division to kiss the ring. I'm not here to kiss the ring of Bill Belichick. I'm here to beat his A. Now, like I said, it might be the wrong comparison because he got his butt kicked and then, of course, went to Buffalo, stayed in the division, and got butt kicked there, too. But I think that's what I feel like Durant was almost saying subliminally to LeBron James. Like, man, you don't need to be talking to me. I'm my own man, and I'm right here, and I'm going to stand jaw to jaw with you, and you know what? You're going to respect me as a man because I'm not taking a back seat anymore. That's kind of the way I looked at it.
No, and that's true, and you're right. It wasn't like brows furled or anything like that, but It was. I think it was. It's nice to see. I mean, for all sides, in that twisted kind of way, that there is a little energy and a little dislike, you know, going on all sides. There should be. These teams are right now the face of the NBA. Nobody can touch either of them, and it's been the two of them. Obviously, as we know, first time that anybody's had a finals where it's the three same opponents for three straight years instead of just two. So. That was nice to see, and that's a good comparison, thinking of, you know, Durant then versus how Durant handled
just,
that now.
Know,
that's
like
true.
An up-and-coming star, which, you know, Rex Ryan, I guess, you know, could have been considered up-and-coming star type coach, whatever, you know, saying, I'm not here, I'm not going to be deferential to somebody else just because they're on top. I'm coming for them. I'm coming for the crown. I'm not here to bow down before the crown. And I feel like at some point that's what Kevin Durant had to say.
Yeah.
And what he kind of,
I can agree with that.
He kind of has to feel. And I'm not saying he even said it, but I think subliminally or subconsciously, that's kind of what was going on there. Okay. We got a top of the hour break coming here. We're going to talk to Dennis Manilov on the other side of it. What do you say we do something cool on the way into it? Would you like to go to Fifth Third Field and see the Huns play Durham on Saturday? We've got them for you right now. Caller number, what do you think, Kush? Seven? Lucky seven?
That sounds good.
As in Cavs in seven. Let's say caller seven right now. Caller 7-866-240-1065. We'll send you to the Hens and Durham on Saturday at Fifth Third Field from your friends at ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, back after this.
I expect us to come out, you know, guns blazing. You know, you get punched in the face, you want to respond. You know, we know what it takes to win a championship. We know what we have to do in order to win this game. You know, I expect us to come out with a level of focus that we've had this entire season. We split on the road. Think that's the goal. You know, you take care of home court. We did that. And then you go steal one on the road. Think we did that. I don't know where all this added pressure and, you know, this, that, and the other coming from. We did what we wanted to do. My teammates are comfortable with me. If they weren't, we wouldn't be who we are. You know, I think we've had a lot of success. You don't have that success if someone's not comfortable.
They didn't do it by luck. We didn't play up to the level we were supposed to play at. And they exposed that and took advantage of it and came out and played extremely well. So they came out there and took it to us. So you got to give them credit. They can't duplicate that. So we got to be ready for it.
Well, I think it's great for the league what's going on right now for sure. I mean, there's, you know, great storylines, I guess, you can follow all year. And for us to be back in this situation, like you said, this is the third time. And the level of competition and intensity in the finals is unbelievable, especially when you have that history. With the opposing teams. We love to be in the finals every year. I'm sure they would love to be in the finals every year and the back and forth. You know, a lot of things happen in the league that you can't really predict, but that would be good for everybody involved for sure. It'd be a great night to get it done, to take advantage of, you know, the home crowd, the energy, you know, how poorly we played in game four, to try to make the necessary adjustments energy-wise and focus-wise to get it done. And, you know, we're in really good shape right now to have this opportunity.
We were 15-6 right now instead of 15-1. We'd be thinking the exact same way. You take each game, you make your adjustments, you figure out what you can do better, and you do it. We have a versatile team. We have a lot of guys who play. The biggest adjustment in the playoffs that you make is always an emotional one.
They're a great team. They're assembled as good as you can be as a professional team. They're on a quest to win a championship, and, I mean, you can respect that. It's the same challenges, you know, especially being in this building. We knew coming into game five last year, we don't protect the ball, and we don't limit a three-point shooter, then we can get blown out the window and blown out this arena, and it's the same way. You know, we know what our keys to victory is that's going to give us the best possible chance to go back home with a game six.
It was definitely a conscious effort on my end and team's game plan to make sure that we limited Steph and Clay to just some tough shots. We know they're going to make a few shots throughout the game, but you just try to stay locked in as much as possible and prepare for them as best you can. They're some special players, and they make some unbelievable plays, but you just got to keep body on them as much as possible and try to make their shots a little bit more difficult, and I think we did a good job of that in game four. Hopefully we can do that going forward.
My mindset, you know, has to be, you know, winning game, you know, not smiling back and forth or, you know, talking and playing. I mean, they're coming after us, so we got to go after them. And, you know, I don't see anything funny or anything to smile about. You know, hitting and being physical and just saying that they did to us in the first three games, we got to do that. Last game in game four, I thought that's who we are. We got to be physical. If it's talking trash or, you know, knocking guys on the floor, whatever you got to do, we got to do it. We got to be physical.
If we win game five, we're going to go to seven. We win game five, it's going to go to seven. That's our mentality. We believe that our fans here are so great that they are going to put us in such a great position. So if we get this done, and we know the task is going to be great, that's a better team. We finally kind of showing who we are. We believe that if we can get it, and anything can happen in game seven, and we've proven that.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed. 11 minutes after 4, we continue on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo's sports leader. A lot of really good stuff there. Richard Jefferson at the end said, if we get this one, it's going 7. He's guaranteeing victory in game 6, essentially, if they can get past game number 5. Is that smart? Is that kind of just a little bit of mental warfare, a little bit of gamesmanship on the part of the veteran Richard Jefferson? Indeed it is. After all, we weren't supposed to be talking about the NBA Finals today. I really plan to talk all about baseball today because I said it on Friday, and I meant it. The series was over on Friday. There was no way the Cavaliers were going to come back from that debacle of a finish to Game 3 and actually have the heart to win Game 4. And lo and behold, here we sit. So the Cavaliers are indeed in Oakland, and joining us now from Cleveland is our friend Dennis Maniloff to break it down, sports writer extraordinaire for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Dennis Maniloff, how are you, my man?
I'm good, Bob. I'm with you. After the way Game 3 ended, I thought we would be talking about what's going to happen to the Cavs going forward, not Game 5.
Yeah, I tell you what. I mean, today was going to be about baseball to me, and if I did talk about the Cavaliers, it all was going to be what can they do to close the gap between the team that they just swept themselves and the team that just swept them in the NBA Finals. And yet, you know, it's strange, Dennis. I thought the Cavaliers would start hot in Game 4. I really did because, you know, they're going to come out with pride, and that's going to carry them. You know what? We're not done yet. And maybe a quarter and a half, maybe even to halftime, they're going to be right there. And then I figured the Golden State would start to push it out in the middle of the third and then eventually win by a really comfortable margin and pour more champagne on the visitors' carpeting in the visitors' locker room. And that started out that way. They did, but I didn't think they could start that hot. The most points ever in an NBA Finals in one half, 86 points. Obviously ended up with more threes than any team in NBA Finals history. It was just a perfect, perfect night for them and a really, really disastrous night for Steph Curry. And Dennis, for them to win in Oakland, it's almost going to have to replicate itself, isn't it?
You would think, Bob. And that's why I'm not optimistic if I'm a Cavs fan about tonight. Although you play the game. I mean, I get it. And you try your best, but I just don't see how the Cavaliers replicate or come close to replicating the accuracy from the field, specifically the three-point arc that they had in Game 4, again in Game 5, on the road. What's that?
53% as a team from three in Game 4. Unbelievable.
I mean, they're going to have to – you would think they're going to have to find other ways to win. I mean, they can't rely on that kind of shooting. And, you know, I like – some things that I think can carry over from the Cleveland standpoint. I like from game to four to game five, such as the physicality. You know, you got to muck it up against the Warriors. It's easier said than done. I get that, but you have to play grimy. You have to play greasy. You can't let them make their shots, prance around, and not feel you on both sides of the court. And I think of all the players on Golden State, that's most important for is Steph Curry. When you're playing Curry, you have to hit him. And I don't mean illegally necessarily, like cheap shot wise, but you've got to bump him. You've got to grind him. You've got to pull him. You've got to tug him. I mean, make him know that you're there at both ends of the court, because I think you can wear him down or you can frazzle him a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's very possible, too. Dennis, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about what Ty Lue said. This isn't X's and O's. This is attitude. This isn't about, the three-point shooting and all that sort of thing and how to defend them, but it's all about the attitude.
You know, I thought the first two games we were being too nice. The first three games, helping guys up off the floor, smiling, talking to guys, and, yeah, I didn't like that. So I'll take game four over anything else. So, you know, talking trash, being physical. Whatever you got to do to try to get that edge to win, you got
to
do it.
To say that it got chippy is an understatement. It really, really got chippy. There was some jaw-to-jaw discussions being held between LeBron James and Kevin Durant. We saw, obviously, Pachulia punch. Who was it in the inside of the thigh? It almost
Shump.
It was who? Shump, yeah.
Shump.
It almost looked like a groin shot, but it wasn't. But he kind of punched him in the inside of the thigh, basically to say, get your leg off me. And then, of course, we know Draymond is Draymond, and he continues to cause havoc. He continues to, with his histrionics, create situations where I think he probably should have four or five technicals in these four games already, and they're being way too lenient with him. Ty Lue says, let's ratchet it up a little bit. No more helping them up. No more nice guy. No more, I want us to be nasty, and I want us to be mean like we were in game four. Do you think that is the right recipe for tonight?
Absolutely. I mean, like, where was that, Ty Lue, at the start of the series? And I know it's hard to gin that up. You know, I get it. When you get into a series, you don't automatically go in saying, I'm going to hate you in the first minute, even though these teams have history and they have history of trash talk. But, you know, I get that in a series, you need to sort of warm to it, but you would have thought by halftime of game one, the Cavaliers would have, you know, put their nasty masks on. And I, again, I'm not saying, even if the Cavs played angry and played physical, super physical, that they would have won games one or two, all right? Because those were pretty decisive victories by the Warriors. But I get the whole point. You have to play that way, in my opinion, to have a chance. You can't get in this, you know, orchestrated track meet with these guys and the free-flowing game that, you know, where you feel like, oh, hey, our offense is clicking and we're scoring, you know, 110, you're usually going to get beat by them because they score 125 to 130. Now, it didn't happen in game four. I get that, but you can't expect it again. You can't expect to replicate that in game five.
No, you really can't. And I think you said it well. You know, you're going to have to do something different to win this game because you just cannot do that, especially, you know, they feed off the crowd at home. And that's not, I think most teams do, obviously. They'd rather play in front of their building. They get momentum. They get adrenaline. They get juiced up, and it helps. And then, of course, things get contagious, and everybody starts throwing in threes from with their left hand, for crying out loud. So all of that can happen at home. And on the road, you know, it's just the opposite, and we've seen it. Klay hits one, then Curry hits one, then Curry hits another, and then suddenly even Green hits one, and it starts to go the other way. I feel as though if somebody is to get hot again and really run this thing out, it's not going to be the Cavaliers. It's going to be the home team, and it could very well be a nasty close to the series.
I agree. Yeah, I'm seeing a victory by the Warriors, probably decisive.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the crowing will happen because then after that, it's going to be, well, you see, we had Draymond Green in game five, and we won, so we should have had three titles in a row.
I'm so tired of that argument.
Yeah, I am too. You know, obviously as a Clevelander, I mean, but you know it's coming, and they're going to say, "Well, we had Green last year." But
you had him in game six and you lost. You had him in game seven and he went off and you lost.
Right.
So enough.
And not only that, here's the thing: you're responsible for your own players. Okay, I can't get that through to the Warriors fans. You're responsible for the conduct of your own guys. So if your own guy is ejected from a game or suspended from a game, that's on you. It's not on some, you know, Martian outside of the arena who's doing it. So, yeah, but you know that's going to happen. Here's the thing, though. Bob, and I wanted to ask you this because I know you're a great host, but I wanted to throw a question to you.
Please.
What I'm going through here is, let's suppose, I'm going to give you two scenarios. Game five, Cavs, very competitive, but ultimately come up short in the last couple of minutes, all right? Five-game series, lose 4-1, but the last three games, you were very competitive, assuming, you know, hypothetical A.
Right.
You were very competitive in game three, could have won it. You blew them out in game four, and you battled in game five.
Right.
Or you get blown out in game five, and you've got three blowouts en route to a 4-1 series loss. How does that then get processed by LeBron James? Does he say, you know what, we had three out of five competitive games. I can deal with bringing this crew back largely intact. Or if it's three blowouts, you sit there as LeBron James and say, I'm not reheating this group. We've got to shuffle the deck.
First of all, you'd have to assume, and I'm assuming this is your intent here, is to say that it is LeBron James' deck to shuffle, that he is responsible for the roster as constructed, and he would be responsible for whatever changes that they make. Is that what you're? I mean, is he pretty much calling all the shots?
De facto, yes, pretty much, yes.
Before I answer your question, let me ask you this one then. if this is indeed LeBron's personally assembled roster, because in large part it is, it was his influence that got Tristan paid. It was his influence that got J.R. Smith overpaid. It was his influence that got Darren Williams there, and probably Kyle Korver too. If that is his,
and love.
Yeah, of course, and love. If that is his, and it fails in the second scenario where it's, you know, three blowout losses and a 4-1 finals loss, does he own any of that? Does he own any of it? Saying, yeah, I played my hardest and I averaged a triple double, but the guys that I wanted and that I convinced Dan Gilbert to write $50-60 million worth of checks in luxury taxes to do this here wasn't enough and got blown out. Does he own any of that? Does he wear any of the responsibility for the failure of his own personal, personally constructed roster?
That's a great question, and I think, though, the answer publicly is no, and simply because he is not going to own it, because he has always tried to say, it's not mine, it's not, you know, I'm not the GM. He's made it, you know, a point, even though I believe, like you, that behind the scenes, you know, you can't put a player on that team without his permission, if you will.
Right.
And yes, he did help the big guys get paid, and he did bring love in. So privately, he would probably say, you know what, this roster that I helped construct is just not good enough to beat this version of the Warriors. But will blame come because of that? No, he's just going to say, hey, that's how it happened. They added Durant, but he's certainly not going to blame himself, because he has never said, this is my team, I constructed it.
Right. Well,
I mean, so he won't say it publicly.
Yeah. He hasn't said that, he has made public statements during the contract negotiations of Tristan and JR saying, I want this done. He has made public statements that were, you know, we need to get this guy in the fold. He's a big, big part of what we do, which is, to me, about as public as saying, hey, I'm running the show here as you can possibly get.
Solid point.
So that being the case, you know, if he ever does make the, hey, you need to get me better help here, I've only got a few good years left, or maybe a couple great years left and then a few good ones after that, you need to get me help. Well, you know what? This is what you chose already. So that's number one. To answer your question, I'd almost have to go with number one or scenario A, and have a close loss and have him go to battle with this roster the way it is. And the only reason why is if it's the second one or B, how do you improve this roster when so many of the parts that cost the most money are unmovable? You know, if you wanted to, say, bring in a Paul George and make a deal and get Paul George in, you know, he'd probably have to play the two since LeBron is a three. And that's what Paul George is. And you'd probably have to jettison J.R. Smith, but he's already under guaranteed money. Nobody's going to take that contract in a trade. Hell, nobody wanted him as a free agent. You know, the Cavs were bidding against themselves while he sat there for all those weeks and months as a free agent. You know, Tristan has an immovable contract, I believe. Obviously, Kevin Love is a max player. You want to keep him. Kyrie is a max player. You want to keep him. And the rest of the pieces are just ancillary pieces. How would you make any move in the second scenario, Dennis, to quote-unquote reshuffle the deck and bring in better players than what they already have here?
That's a great question, Bob. And here's the reason I threw the hypothetical out at you in the first place, is because tonight is a fascinating night, potentially, for the history of this franchise, or at least in the short term, meaning the next couple of years, because I believe it could come down to, if they're competitive and they lose, they still look at it, even though it was a 4-1 series, LeBron and the guys look at it and say, you know what, we should have won game three, we could have been 2-2, this is a competitive enough roster to hang with these guys. Or you could have that blowout scenario where all of a sudden you have to say, wait a minute, do we match up? Mm-hmm. And because of the move that Durant to Golden State, now it doesn't look good for us to, and I'm saying us meaning the Cavs,
right.
They say to themselves, all right, we got to make changes. Now, as you said, how do you make them? Well, number one, you start with a general manager, Dan Gilbert. I mean, as far as we know, David Griffin is twisting in the wind. Now, he said the other day that you don't believe everything you read. Well, okay, but nobody has come out and said definitively that David Griffin is back as the general manager of the Cavaliers, beginning in the middle of the summer. So I say the first move you make as for the Cavs, if you're going to do a remodeling or a facelift, is David Griffin comes back as the general manager. He's absolutely the guy I want to do this. You know, I want a confident guy who can figure out how to shuffle the deck. Once you get Griffin locked up, assuming he and Gilbert mend their fences, then I think Griffin looks at the roster, and assuming it is a case where they say we're overmatched, we have to make changes, I think it starts with Love. You know, even though Love probably, you know, has had a decent series, I mean, assuming tonight he doesn't fall on his face, he will have had a decent series. But I still think Love's the guy that is probably the most vulnerable out of all of them because, number one, he has talent. Number two, somebody else would want him, unlike, as you said, Shump or JR or Tristan Thompson. And obviously LeBron's not going anywhere, and I don't think Kyrie's going anywhere, even though I said recently that anything was on the table after LeBron. I doubt very seriously that Kyrie would get moved. So you assume LeBron and Kyrie are back. That leaves Love as probably your most tradable piece, but it still would be incredibly long odds to bring in a big name because you have to trade dollar for dollar, and
exactly.
It's very difficult.
And not only that, Dennis, what I would ask is, either on the trade market or on the free agent market, what upgrade could be made over a Kevin Love that makes you more competitive with the Golden State Warriors? Because if the assumption is, and it is correctly, that you're still the best team in the East, and you're still going to end up having to play them in the finals again probably for a fourth time next year, what is an upgrade over Kevin Love at the power forward position that would make you more likely to beat Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green next year? Because I don't know anybody out there that is going to get you 13 rebounds a night. Even when he's not shooting well, as he wasn't in Game 3, still got you 13 rebounds and 6 steals and played a role in that lead that was withered away when nobody could score in the last 3 minutes and 8 seconds. And then, of course, last night, or Game 4 on Friday, he was on fire. He was, 6 of 8 again and had 27 points, and he had 20-something in Game 2. My point is, while he may not be quite on the level of LeBron and Kyrie in terms of value for the Cavaliers, if you trade him, what are you going to get that's better than him that will help you be more competitive with Golden State? What's out there on the trade market?
Yet another fascinating question for Bob France. I don't know the answer to that question. David Griffin probably does, but I don't. I who knows who's available?
Let me ask you, Dennis, not from a name standpoint, because that's hard, who's available on the trade market. From a style standpoint, give me a perfect scenario. What kind of player, if Kevin Love was to be on the block here, because they've got to reshuffle, as you say, to try to find a way to close that gap between themselves and the Warriors after a hypothetical blowout here in Game 5 and three blowouts out of 4 victories in a 5-game final series. What kind of player, perfect scenario, would the Cavaliers add that would close that gap?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen, but Kawhi is the type of player that you'd want on this team, of course, and he's not coming, of course. He's staying with San Antonio probably for the rest of his career. You hear Paul George mentioned, of course, but I think that's unrealistic. You have to trade for him to begin with, as far as I know, based on his contract language, if you're going into next year.
Just hypothetically, let's say it was Paul George, and it was Kevin Love who departed, and not J.R. Smith or somebody else. What does that do? What does that do for the roster? Does that slide LeBron James to the 4 in place of Kevin Love and Paul George at the 3? How does that make this team, and I'm not saying it doesn't, this is a question, not a rhetorical one, a legitimate one. Is a Paul George sliding into the Cavaliers starting lineup and Kevin Love sliding out of it to another city, does that close the gap with the Warriors?
I hear you. I don't know that it automatically does. Yeah, I hear you, and that's again where I think, you know, absent a firm general manager, or let's say even if you get Griffin, okay, Griffin's got to talk to the King, and he's got to say, all right, King, going forward, are you restless, impatient, or are you willing to continue to ride with this bunch? Because we can't, you know, let's say Griffin's talking to LeBron. He says, LeBron, I can't move Thompson. I can't move Smith. I can't move Shump. Tyree's staying, we assume. So, you know, and okay, you want me to move Love, but to where and for whom?
Right.
And that's where I think it could come down to this for LeBron. I mean, we know he's an impatient guy, and we know the years are mounting, and he's got a short window now to win titles. But maybe he sits there and he says, what did the Spurs do under Popovich? And we know he loves Popovich and loves the Spurs. What did they do when they lost in the playoffs? Did they automatically blow up the roster or try to blow up the roster and come back with a whole new group of guys? No, not in the heyday of the Duncans, the Parkers, the Ginobili's. I know they added LaMarcus and whatnot, but for the most part, the Spurs have stayed put with their core, and they've added pieces around the core during the course of their glorious run.
From the Duncan to the Kawhi core.
Correct.
You know, I mean, where he evolved, because, you know, he started out as a 6-point-a-game rookie and then became what he is now, which is an MVP candidate. And that's a little bit different than going out there and trying to trade for a whomever on the
exactly. That's my point. During the heyday of Parker, Ginobili, and Duncan, they did not win. The Spurs did not win every title, okay? When they didn't win titles, they didn't blow those guys out, all right? They said, we're going to keep coming back, and we're going to make tweaks on the periphery, and we're going to add a little piece here, a little piece there. Does LeBron say, you know what? I get that we got handled by the Warriors, but I'm willing to roll with this group again because I think it's, first of all, it gives us our best chance to get back to the finals. Secondly, I do recognize that these guys are virtually untradeable. And thirdly, we can play better in the finals if we get these guys again, if we get the Warriors again. So let's stay with the same crew.
You know, the tough part about this, Dennis, and Jim Kush wants to get in here as well. So, Jimmy, you can respond to this too.
What up, Kush?
But Kush is here. But the tough thing about this is, and this is just the reality of the situation, it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. The Spurs, in your example, never faced a situation like this where if they didn't win a title, as you say, they didn't blow it up, they just kind of tweaked it on the periphery. But they could do that because there was never a dynastic type of all-time team in the way, where it's like, if we don't do something major, tweaks aren't going to help us close the gap. They're going to roll us again next year, too, and they're going to roll us again next year, too. And with all four of the Golden State core all in their 20s, for crying out loud, even though, right, I think Curry is 29, so he'll be over that that bump in a bit. But they're all in the future just looks like there's something massive has to happen. And unfortunately, what they did to get there is unlikely to ever be replicated, where you have an already 70-win team that happens to, in the off season, in which the TV contracts were renegotiated and the salary cap exploded with new room, and an MVP happened to be in his free agent year and looking to move. It just all was such a perfect storm of events that enabled a Kevin Durant to end up on a Golden State. And I feel like, Dennis and Jim, that the only way for the Cavaliers to keep up with them and close the gap with them would be for a similar circumstance to happen.
Wow.
And it isn't gonna. Because A, there isn't another Durant MVP who's going to be in a free agent year. And B, there isn't going to be another explosion of salary cap room to do it. The Warriors just had lightning strike for them at just the right time, and the rest of the league is going to pay the price for it.
I didn't want to jump Kush, but Bob, you said up until the last point where you said it isn't going to happen, you captured what LeBron's retort to me would have been. If I would have said to the King, hey, why don't you do the Spurs model? Why don't you just come back with the core, tweak it? He'd be like, hey, wait a minute. This is a totally different set of circumstances. Not only were the Spurs the gold standard that everybody was chasing, but in this case, this is such a unique case because a top five player in the league was added to it, a 73-win team. You just haven't seen that before, and therefore LeBron, I think, would say, I can't stand pat under that circumstance. So we have to
shuffle. Especially at age 32.
Somehow. Exactly. So I don't blame LeBron in this case for being restless. If he's heading into his 15th season and he's looking at this behemoth that somehow, some way came together in a salary cap league, they fit them all in. They didn't compromise their bench incredibly. So they're going to be back. And if you're LeBron, do you want to sit tight with the status quo largely? I agree. I don't think you do.
Kush, go ahead.
You know, and thinking about all this, too, because, heck, before Game 4, when everybody in the world seemingly thought it was going to be a sweep, I was already starting to read the articles of, oh, be advised, you're going to hear all about Kevin Love being traded and things like that. And the Cavs are in such, you know, a bad position because of the tax and all that. That's why any important move they make can only, that's another part we have to stress in this conversation, can only be via trade. They have no ability whatsoever to sign anybody that would make any reasonable amount of difference. And all I keep thinking is, and I agree with you guys, you know, the Tristan contracts and the Shumps and those kind of contracts are probably untradeable given what the contracts are and what that player would, in all likelihood, give some other team. And that's why it keeps coming back to Kevin Love. And I keep arguing, you know, they shouldn't, on two reasons. One, we always are talking, and it was true the last year, or at least last year anyway, that he seemingly is a bad matchup against Warriors. Quite frankly, relative for Kevin Love, I think he's having an outstanding finals. And just for giggles, I've compared his season this year to Chris Bosh's third year in Miami. So this will be 13-14. This will be 12-13. Sorry about that. It'll be 12-13. And what I find is, even though both were all-stars, they're the same age, they're both 28, and Kevin Love's numbers are better by about 3 points and almost 5 rebounds a game, and he shoots more threes. You still have to have at least 3 big-time players. So I'm with you guys. I don't even know, regardless of the hypothetical, whether it's a close game tonight or get blown out tonight and it ends in the 4-1, I don't know which way you go on this without involving some kind of Kevin Love because of the other contracts. And I just frankly wouldn't do it
because he's going to be better than this system,
and his numbers are showing it out. It's better than what Bosch was giving him as the third wheel in Miami.
Yeah.
Tremendous comparison by Coach.
And it is possible, too. We don't know this for a fact because LeBron doesn't talk publicly about it. But it's possible that when all the Carmelo stuff was floating around, that the King squashed that because he did not want to lose Kevin Love. He did not want to jettison Love because he does recognize what Kush is talking about. That maybe, you know, even though Love is popular lightning rod, maybe it's not his fault. Maybe you're better to stay with him and come back with this, the big three, and then try to, you know, add around, you know, periphery stuff. But I will say this, absent of a major ability to make a move, and as we know, their luxury tax tied up, I would do two things if I'm LeBron coming into the offseason. Number one, Tristan Thompson, you must develop some kind of an offensive game. Because as you see in these finals, glaringly, the Warriors are defending 4-on-5 every time the Cavs come down the court and Thompson's on the floor. I mean, you can't run anything through him. He not only can he not shoot, he doesn't pass. So you have a guy that is killing you on the offense. People wonder, why did the ball get stuck when the Cavs are on offense? Some of it's because they can't run anything through Thompson. So I would say, you know, to improve next year, LeBron says to Thompson, you gotta come up with some kind of offense. And number two, I'm gonna count on JR to come back and be a better player and obviously have the tremendous focus that it takes to be a great pro, granting that this year was an aberration because of the family situation that he had that, you know, thankfully is going well now with his baby. But if you get those are two areas where I think you can improve internally and maybe help your cause come finals if you get there.
Dennis Maniloff joining us from Cleveland, talking about the finals and talking about the state of the Cavaliers as they head into game number 5 tonight of the NBA Finals. Dennis, we're out of time, but just very quickly, the only other third scenario that we have not discussed, you know, scenario A being, come back with the team as it's currently built and hope you get off to a better start in the finals next year in games 1 and 2, not be in such a hole. Maybe you can do this thing. Number 2 is if you get blown out tonight, a major shuffling of the roster involving the loss of a Kevin Love or a moving of somebody like that. Number three would be LeBron being the impatient man that you point out that he is, and being a guy who has already done his duty. He did what he promised he would do, and that is bring a championship to his home region of Northeast Ohio, saying after this season, I'm out. I can't see the roster flexibility here to make us good enough to compete with Golden State in my last two or three years of really tremendous championship viability, so I'm going to go somewhere else where I can. And whether that's to an Oklahoma City to play with Russell or – and I'm not saying that would be a great matchup. I'm just trying to think out loud. Or to go play with CP3 yeah. in L.A. or whatever the case might be. D-Man, what do you think the odds are that he says – neither one of the scenarios you and I and Kush just described is going to work in Cleveland to close the gap. Maybe I got to find another scenario.
Yeah, you never say never, obviously, especially with LeBron, but I don't think it happens for 17, 18. And I think I'm almost positive he's under contract.
He is under contract this year. I'm talking about if he goes through this one more time and then next year, the year after that he's gone.
Right, it's not an option situation like it has been in previous years. So I think he's here next year for sure.
Right.
And then I think after that, all bets are off, especially if they come up short of a title at the end of next season. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he got restless enough to leave, but he's gonna, in my opinion, not only will he be here, but I don't think he's gonna say, hey, you gotta get me out of here. You gotta trade me. No, I think it's a case where LeBron comes back for one more shot with this crew or a remodeled crew,
right.
Certainly with the Cavaliers. But I don't know that it's, in other words, I don't think it's a guarantee by any stretch that he plays out the remainder of his career as a Cavalier.
Fair enough.
That's not a crisis. I mean, if we in Cleveland, if we get him next season, that's 11 seasons as a Cavalier for one of the all-time greats. So, I got no complaints.
Well done, Dennis Manteloff. Enjoy game number five tonight, my friend. Neither one of us are optimistic, but it's great that there is a game five. I didn't expect to have one happening tonight. So we'll enjoy that, and we'll talk again soon. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, my friend.
Congratulations to Joe Huss of Lambertville. He's going to the Mud Hens game on Saturday against Durham. I've got another pair sitting in my hands right now. Actually, it's sitting right there on the desk. I'm not holding it, but I could. 866-240-1065. Caller 8, 866-240-1065. Another pair of Hens Durham tickets for Saturday at 5th Third, and we're back after this.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a great conversation with Dennis Manteloff covering pretty much all things going into game number five of the NBA Finals. We kind of had to stick with that only because it was something that was so unexpected, and that is the fact that there is a game number five. By the way, congratulations to Shane Wesley of Liberty Center. He won the most recent pair of Mud Hens tickets for this Saturday's game at Fifth Third Field against Durham. We'll have more to give away on tomorrow's program. Jim, I mentioned this in the top of the hour.
Mm-hmm.
The top of the first hour, I should say, in the monologue portion of the show. And I actually didn't want to bring it up with Dennis because I knew he'd go crazy. Because he is just about the biggest LeBron honk you're ever going to meet. And I respect him for it. He's obviously has tremendous sports knowledge. But LeBron James is averaging, let me get a couple of stats here. Number one, he's averaging a triple-double in these NBA finals. That's remarkable. Nobody's ever done it. Number two, going into tonight, good news for the Cavaliers and for LeBron fans. He's going to have a great game. He is averaging, in his career, 32.5 points per game in elimination games, more than anybody else in history. So when his back is up against the wall and his team is facing elimination, he comes out with a huge game. That's pretty fair to say, most of the time anyway. Obviously not so much in 2011 and then some of the finals games he's 3-4 in finals, as we know, that he has lost. But in elimination games, he comes to play. So give him that. But a couple of other stats that I found a little bit interesting to me. As people, you know, I was listening to Greeny today saying that, you know, even though the Warriors win, Kevin Durant will win the MVP. And he will deserve it because he's playing extraordinarily well. That he still believes LeBron James to be the MVP of the series because of that triple-double average and also because of the statistic that shows the Cavaliers, for example, in Game 3, were plus 7 when LeBron James was on the court.
Right.
And they were minus 12 in the 2 minutes that he sat. So, in other words, he can't even take a break If he takes a break and catches his breath and is subbed in for even 2 minutes, it all falls apart. Further, in the 26 minutes that he has sat in this series, four-game series thus far, they're minus 31. So the implication being, of course, that in the plus-minus world, you know, LeBron James on the court, they lose. That's just that simple. They can't play without him. And I'm not a big fan of that statistic for one reason, and particularly for that Game 3 stat that I just gave you, plus 7 with him on the court and then minus 12 when he's off the court. If you watch that run that Golden State went on right after LeBron went out, it is not something that couldn't have just as easily happened with him on. And that was, you got a little Curry flurry. Oh, my God, that sounds terrible. Yeah. I didn't mean to do that, but it was a flurry of threes from Steph Curry. You know what? If there's any marketers at all out there in California right now, they're working with Dairy Queen and developing a curry flurry. They have to be. If they're not, honest to God, then they're just stupid. And if they do it, I want the royalties.
I can agree with that.
Anyway, they came down and hit like three threes in four straight trips.
Yeah.
Which they're
capable of doing, this team specifically, as we know, literally at any given time.
Right, exactly. As if, had LeBron not subbed out, they wouldn't have hit those three threes.
Last time I checked,
trips.
He was on the court for the 11-0 run to end the game.
Thank you. That was going to be my point. Thank you. My point was going to be, because Golic was all over that this morning. Oh, my God. You know, LeBron, when he was out for 120 seconds, 2 minutes, they went plus 12. The Cavs can't even stay on the court without him there. That's the true definition of value. And you're getting all of this stuff. Kellerman's doing that, too, on First Take. And it's just one of those things where it just bothers me because, yes, they went on a 12-0 run while LeBron was on the bench, but they have gone on 12-0 runs with LeBron on the floor as well. Look at Game 1. Look at Game 2 when it started to get away from the Cavs. LeBron was on the court. And they were out there, splash, splash, Clay, splash, boom. I promise you there are two-minute runs where LeBron is on the court that they're going, that Golden State is going off and going on 12-0 runs or worse. And guess what? You know what nobody says? Nobody says, well, you know, Kyle Korver was on the bench during that run. When Kyle Korver went out, the Warriors went on a 12-0 run. God dang, Audie, you cannot sub out Kyle Korver either. That's how silly that argument is. And the capper is what you said, Jim. You stole my thunder, but it's okay. You can have it. When the game was on the line in winning time, 3 minutes to go, LeBron was not on the bench. He was on the floor. And they were up 6. And they allowed an 11-0 run while he was there. And nobody at Mike and Mike said anything about it. Nobody on First Take said anything about it. Nobody on Lebatard said anything. All of these LeBron honks who are just, you know, my God, he can't even take a chance to catch his breath tonight or else the Cavaliers will lose by 12. That's what they're saying about tonight. Stop it. Get over it. Ty Lue, be smart. Give him the rest he needs in the first half so that he does have the energy and the juice if there is to be a game to be decided in the fourth quarter and he doesn't wilt the way he did in Game 3 when Kevin Durant took over the basketball game and thus the series. And that is where we're going to have to leave it because the music is playing and I do hear it. Drive Time is coming. I'm next with Mr. Mike Miller. Kush, great job as always. Thanks so much. Thanks to you for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the next edition of the Extravaganza. Bye-bye.